There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. And we are live at Allegri Farm Markets in Daphne. And I'll need you to put that headset on right there because Billy Stent from Bill E's Small Batch Bacon has joined us because you're part of the program right here at Allegri.
That's right. Happy to be here.
So how do you, so when you harvest your bacon early in the morning, you go out in the fields and harvest your bacon and bring it right, no, that's not how it works.
Some people think that.
So, no, this is great because there's so many local products here at Allegri, and obviously you have the most local and the tastiest bacon. Bacon that's sung to.
You got to sing to your pork belly.
You sing to the pork. Now, pork belly. Now, let's first of all, we want to talk about your product and why people need to grab some of this, but it starts with the pork belly. How long from pork belly to bacon? How long is that process?
In my world, it's 9 to 12 days.
Okay.
We hear the term curing, right?
Is that what was going on?
So we get the fresh bellies in, peeled and trim, meaning no skin and no waste. I don't want to have anything wasted.
Right.
So they come in within 48 hours of slaughter twice a week.
Okay.
We cure them in a heavy kosher salt, dark brown sugar, real molasses, and let them sit under refrigeration for 8 days. Not seven, not nine, but 8 days.
There's 8 days. So there's a reason for that. Right.
It lands really good. So starts as a dry cure, ends up wet. We then take the bellies and we slow smoke them using hickory, the way our ancestors did.
Right.
And then I end up with a product that you still taste the pork. And it's all made behind our stage, so it gets sung to the whole time.
That's right. So it's actually the only serenaded bacon I know of in this nation.
That's right. If you were there talking to the bacon right now,
right,
we could have narrated bacon.
How long, you've been doing this for a while. How long has this been?
Several years.
How'd you get into this? Why don't you start doing this?
My dad was in the packaging business, and I traveled with him, and then I was a chef, and then I worked for a corporate restaurant company, and then 8 years ago, I opened the crazy little Billy's Old 27 Grill, and I've always made bacon. Every year as a growing up, I would make it as a hobby. But then when
strange hobby you get into.
It's a great hobby, though.
I guess.
And I just started making it for myself, and I would order everybody's bacon from all over the country to try it out, and I couldn't ever find what I wanted, and so people
made
started.
It.
Yeah, it's a great product. I'm really proud of it.
And people who have not, you know, they probably had it, like the best restaurants around will have it to crumble upon stuff. But right. if somebody wants to come get, I want to get me some bacon here.
Right.
Where I can come here and pick it up.
You can come to any Allegra and plenty of the other stores around here. But they sell it like crazy right here on this corner.
All right. So in that process, you're talking about the curing of the bacon. Is that when you change the flavor? You know, you'll see different kind of, like if somebody's at the store and look at the commercial bacons, it'll be, this is maple or this is this or this is, that's when that change happens in that curing process? Or they just spray something on it?
Well, you know, the curing process is where you're actually trying to preserve the meat.
Right.
You know, they would put salted pork in barrels and get on a ship, and they had no idea where they were going or how long it was going to take them to get there.
Right.
And I wanted to kind of go back to those specifications and create a product like that, and then yield something where a chef would be happy to put it into their recipe.
Now, this is, you were talking about this time of year with the corn coming in, how busy Vince is. Whenever tomatoes are, let me just ask this question, because it's just personally, whenever tomatoes are perfect, whenever we're getting great tomatoes in, how do sales of Billy's Bacon go? Do they rise during the tomato, you know, because I have a thing for the BLT.
There is a BLT graph that I go off of. It's a schematic. It's pretty technical.
But you do see it. I mean, once the tomatoes are ready to go, then the bacon is much bacon. Because I will sometimes eat for lunch and dinner BLTs.
Oh, you got to.
So, you know, when those tomatoes are...
You cannot let a tomato die on your counter.
That's right.
Right.
So you do see this rise in demand.
Big time. Yeah. I love those big, beefy tomatoes, like the Sand Mountain tomatoes, when you peel them...
You're speaking my language
It makes
now.
A whole nother sandwich.
Yes.
Oh, man, it's just a big difference. Salted and peeled.
You know, you're talking real BLT language. Yeah. When you went Sand Mountain with your tomatoes, yeah. I know you got your game. Okay, if people want to get more information about your bacon, other than they can come here and pick some up and do a taste test, but let's talk about online or anywhere to get more information.
Yeah, you can, BILLESbacon.com. Billy's. My name's William Ernest, and that's where the Bill E's came
from. Okay. But you'll answer to Billy.
Billy, William, Will, I'll take a check to any one of them.
They'll all go through. And what about if people buy your bacon, it comes, like,
we sell it sliced and unsliced. The slice flies off the shelf. Once people realize that they can get a 1 pound stick of unsliced, cured, and smoked pork belly,
right?
They go nuts because you lay that on the grill next to your steaks. Cut it, instead of cutting it long ways, cut it short ways. It fits perfect on a biscuit or an English muffin. It makes incredible Eggs Benedict. But it's just a whole other flavor.
Grilling it.
Yeah, grilling it's incredible.
Grilling it is, yeah. So if we're going to do that, you say come get the full,
get the 1 pound unsliced stick. It's, it's a foodie kind of dream.
Well, that's what, you know, and I was talking to Vince about that. I mean, it's like what used to be normal probably for your grandparents and parents and my grandparents, that you would just get your food. You knew somebody who had bacon. You knew somebody who had, you know, Silver King and Silver Queen corn. Right. You knew somebody had watermelons. Then we got away from this as a country. Yeah. For
convenience.
Convenience. And,
right.
I was the weird kid that even in my 20s had a garden. But, but it circles back around. And now, you know, you said the foodie thing.
Yeah.
It is... It's come back gangbusters here.
It's big time right now, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's going to continue to increase, and people are going to demand more items from their own backyard and neighborhoods, and I think that's wonderful. I think it is wonderful.
Well, you hear more stories, of food questions, leave it that way, or recalls or something that's produced over, overseas or across the country or something like that, and there's no recourse. They say, well, that's a product that was made, 6 months ago and has been frozen and is now out and it's just now making it in the marketplace. Yours is how many, 8 days?
Typically, when you pick up a pack of Billy's bacon, it was on the hoof less than 14 days ago.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, walking around.
Good stuff. Once again, website?
Billy's, BILLES, bacon.com. I appreciate you having me, man. I got my hair cut for this.
Good. We'll get our picture made afterwards. And if I have my pull hat on, we'll do it here. And y'all come see us. We're at Allegri Farm Market in Daphne. And I'll tell you what, the next person stop on by, hook you up with one of the certificates here for a dozen ears of Silver King. Yes, it's coming in as we've been sitting here. The corn's coming in. And look behind you.
Ooh.
Yes, it looks like butter beans are coming in here. And when I say, y'all, that the produce is coming in while we're doing the show, I'm right here where the produce comes in on this side of Allegri Market, and there are coolers full of great produce coming in right now. So stop on by and grab some right now, although they're open, 7 days a week, and Monday through Saturday, the long hours, and they're open for you 9 to 5 on Sunday as well. All right, coming right back, we're going to be joined by Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. What about this Culver House thing? You heard about the whole Culver House question about, did he make the donation before Alabama passed the abortion law? Did he take the donation back? There's a series of emails that came out from University of Alabama systems. We'll talk about that with Todd Stacey and get the real story when we come back. Live from Allegri Markets, this is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live at Allegri Farm Markets in Daphne. Having a great time. A lot of folks stopping by and visiting. We are giving away these certificates like crazy. Of course, they're for, they're for Silver King corn. So how could you go wrong? I'm watching speckled butter beans just showed up as I was sitting here, plus some lima beans. Seriously, this is really awesome to sit here at the side of the building as the fresh produce comes in out of the fields and shows up at Allegri Farm Markets. It's happened like 5 or 6 times since the show's been started. We'll hopefully make this guy hungry for some good home produce. That's our buddy Todd Stacy from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. What's happening, man?
Hey, well, I'm not having as much fun as you are, it sounds like. That farmer's market sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Baldwin County, I mean, the sweet corn's coming in, all the great produce is coming in, and people can you'd be jealous of me today, that's for sure. So, because you got to go to the State House, right? So you got Goat Hill, and I got the farm market. I think I win.
I think you do, too, especially considering how hot it is in downtown Montgomery. But that's right. We're downtown today doing a lot of meetings and things. In fact, I've got an interview with the Speaker of the House, Mac McCutcheon, here in about an hour. But it's nice to catch up with you, Sean.
It is, and I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the podcast as well with you. But first, I need your help, because when I got the email this morning from you, which will tell folks how to get that email in their inbox each morning, you did the best job, I think, of any news entity out there of explaining the question around this Hugh Culverhouse situation between the University of Alabama and this attorney who lives down in Florida now. Can you kind of lay that out for folks the way you did it today?
Sure. Well, I guess everybody's kind of been talking about this. It's been a lot on social media. Hugh Culverhouse, who is this mega donor to the University of Alabama, the law school is named after him, if that gives you any idea. He's given more than $25 million, 26.5, in fact, to the university over the years. And that's just a huge amount. And I think it's the most ever in the history of the University of Alabama. And he made waves a few weeks ago when he announced that he was going to boycott or ask prospective students to boycott the University of Alabama Law School, the one with his name on it, because of the abortion ban passed by the legislature. And it kind of didn't sound right. Like, why would that be your protest? A lot of people weren't happy with the abortion law, but why would that be your
right
way to protest? You know, telling students not to go to Alabama and specifically not to go to the school that your name is on.
Well, he's telling you that the law school was great, great, great a week or two ago. Now it's not great.
Just because the legislature, which has nothing to do with the law school, has passed an abortion ban. So it didn't really add up. And as the days went on, it became clear that there was a lot of disagreement between the Alabama administration, the University of Alabama system, and this Hugh Culverhouse fella. And the board eventually voted to give him his money back, take his name off the law school, and all throughout this process, University of Alabama was very reserved in what they would say about it. They just said, look, has nothing to do with abortion, has nothing to do with the state legislature, there's just some, you know, institutional differences, and we're just going to part ways. They never would go and attack him. But then, over the weekend, after this happened, Hugh Culverhouse went nuclear. He dropped a bomb saying, with an op-ed in the Washington Post, saying that because of his stance on abortion and because he spoke out about abortion, that's why the University of Alabama rejected his money and took his name off the law school. So, of course, the national media just runs with it because it fits this narrative that, oh, Alabama is backward, and we've, you know, passed all these laws that people don't agree with, and this noble, you know, billionaire, this benevolent noble billionaire has objected, and we've kicked him out because of that. That was the narrative developed. Thing is, Sean, it wasn't true. It wasn't true at all. He had been trying to micromanage the university's law school for years, and it really kind of came to a head this year. In recent months, and the university finally said, okay, we're tired of it, and they released all the emails showing just how far this Culverhouse fellow has gone in recent months trying to dictate the law school.
Yeah, and the timeline's important because it is, I mean, it shows it in timestamps and emails and back and forth. This was ongoing before the legislature ever made the law.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it goes back to March. They released emails. I mean, look, we had already reported the Daily News for Sunday, and I get a press release from the University of Alabama with all these emails. I'm like, oh boy, this is something. They had just released this chain of emails, probably about 13 or 14 different email exchanges, in which Culverhouse had gone to the dean of the law school, he had gone to the university president, he had gone to the chancellor, all down the list, all kinds of administrators, trying to sort of micromanage how things went. He decided that certain people should be, he didn't like the dean, he wanted the dean gone. He decided certain people needed to be professors and things like that. Sean, that's not what donors do. Everybody knows, right, if you give a lot of money to a university, sure, you get influence. You get doors opened. You get a seat at the table.
Good football tickets. Good football tickets, yeah.
Bowl game tickets. Institutional decisions. That's how they get in trouble. That's how Auburn got in trouble a long time ago. And so the emails very clearly show that he had overstepped his bounds. The administration was tired of it. And they were, he had threatened to take back his money, and finally they just said, look, we just need to part ways. But it was never about abortion, and it was never, it preceded any kind of statement that he had on abortion. So it just got debunked.
Well, and the nice thing is that, that maybe people know it, but here's the question. It's the old retraction thing, right? I mean, will this end up showing up at those national news? Of course it'll show up, but somewhere that people will read it. All the people that read it and said, look at that stupid Alabama, now will they read it and go, oh, I see the national news, they reported it that way, was incorrect, was inaccurate.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's the old saying, Winston Churchill, that a lie makes it halfway around the world before the truth get up for breakfast. or the truth gets its pants on, I think maybe the accurate quote. Yeah, well, once you've got that impression, once the national media ran with that narrative, I mean, it's hard to get that horse back in the barn, as it were. And so, yeah, I think it's great that media here in Alabama, not just media, but I mean, folks on both sides of the aisle, Auburn fans, Alabama fans, I mean, all people of all stripes have really come to the defense of the University of Alabama system to call out what is clearly a false narrative being pitched out there, and to call out this Culverhouse guy for being a liar.
I mean, it's blatant. There you go. You said the right word. It's blatant, and he's a liar. It's not even like when I first saw it, I said, okay, this is going to be in the gray, like so many things. This is going to be a subtle interpretation one way versus another subtle interpretation of another way. No, this is straight up lying, making stuff up.
It was a deflection, right? He was being asked to leave. He had tried his best to. And look, I don't think a billionaire like this, I don't think he really is worried about $26 million. But he clearly was trying to exert influence on the University of Alabama Law School. It didn't work. They were going to, a breakup was happening. And he decided that he wanted to, save face, I suppose, by making it about this abortion thing. Well, that is such bad faith. And, it's revealing of his character. And I tell you what, I know it was reported falsely at first and it takes a while to get that narrative back. I think the University of Alabama really comes out looking good here for not having kowtowed to this guy who wanted to take over the place.
Yeah, that is good, and it's hopefully will be reported elsewhere, and people will hear that the whole first narrative is not the truth. You're just joining us talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And remind folks, too, if they want to get this kind of information in their inbox every weekday morning, how they do it.
Yeah, it's real easy. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Just go to the top there and click subscribe. Enter your name and your email. It's free, no cost at all. You'll be on the list, and you'll get the daily news. Like today, we're talking about the University of Alabama. We just kind of unpacked it, just like we talked about here. But of course, we have the actual email.
They have
screenshots and a PDF of all the emails right there for you. We've got a story about K-12 funding, what exactly the education budget did down to the level, not just the top lines, but everything down below. A good long story on that Mary Sell did. So all the news throughout the day, appreciate you signing up. And it's just aldailynews.com and click subscribe.
Yeah, and one of the stories they'll see today, and that goes into our conversation about, we're talking about Alabama's abortion law and it being the false narrative here, Culver House rolled out. But you did put a link to, in national news that you watch as well, the Hyde Amendment and congressional Democrats, you said, increasingly feeling pressure to ditch the Hyde Amendment. Explain that. Explain the situation.
So when it comes to federal appropriations, you know, every year the Congress has to fund the Department of Health and Human Services. And in so doing, they fund a lot of healthcare services throughout the country. Medicaid is the same thing. A lot of money goes towards Medicaid every year. And so every year, Congress includes what's called the Hyde Amendment in the appropriations bills, saying that none of these funds can be used to spend on performing abortions. So this is really the olive branch that keeps the appropriations process running, because obviously a lot of Democrats are pro-choice, a lot of Republicans are pro-life, and man, you can really argue about the ins and outs of appropriations language when it comes to that kind of stuff. But the way they've smoothed it out, the way they've really made it work over the last couple of decades, is this Hyde Amendment that says, okay, we're going to take this off the table. Taxpayer money will not be spent, whether it's Medicaid or federal health centers. None of it will be spent performing abortions. Well, the Democrats have obviously moved very leftward in recent years, and so now their presidential candidates are saying, no, we don't like the Hyde Amendment. We want to take that out. We believe that taxpayer money should be spent performing abortions, Medicaid included. We believe that Medicaid should pay for abortions for low-income people. And there's a lot of people are adamant about that. And so you're seeing more and more calls for stripping out this Hyde Amendment. They haven't done it, and I think they'd be wise to avoid it.
There we go. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks for being on.
All right. Y'all be good.
Will do. Coming right back from Allegri Farm Markets in Daphne.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along on this Monday. We are live at Allegri Farm Markets in Daphne. And Vince, I'm going to have you put that headset on here and talk with us about this. It's like, obviously, it's busy and popping around here. People coming in getting produce. And most of the folks I know in this general area are stopping by. There's our buddy Sid Sexton just right. Stopped on by. It's just from the time we've gotten here, there's people steady. And they're in here for the corn, but I see them getting like all kinds of stuff. And what it just showed up here, those speckled butter beans?
Fresh speckled butter beans and white butter beans. We just picked them and just shelled them and just brought them in, and they're bagging them in the kitchen right now.
Y'all, I mean, as we're sitting here, the coolers come in fresh. Like you said, they slept in the field last night, and
sure
they're here today.
The dew didn't get a chance to dry off of them this morning before we picked them.
This is great. This is, and people come here, you know, I'm sure, throughout the week to get stuff for dinner, but I'm sure there's a lot of people, when it's this time of year, maybe I got too much of my grandparents in me, but I see those, I go, maybe I can buy all these right now and put some up.
You'd be surprised. We're putting them up in large bags for people that can and put away and freeze.
Any tips on that? Any tips on freezing?
I'm not a cooker. I can't cook.
No,
you do
all the other stuff.
I do those stuff. Yeah. No. You need to ask some of these other ladies around here about freezing it up or canning it.
I would probably won't have the opportunity on those when I get them to freeze them, because they'll make it straight into me.
You cook a big pot, and tomorrow night they're better when they come out of the refrigerator and re-warm them up.
Guaranteed.
Yes.
Something happens in the day they cook.
It marinates in there. Yeah. I guess that's the word for it.
Talking about, too, walking around here, if people see these yellow tags in here, what does that mean?
Yellow tag means that we are picking that today.
Okay.
And that's what we change
catch
tags
of the
out.
Day. It's harvest of the day.
There you go. And we'll change them out. You know, there might be a day that we're out or something that day and can't pick it, and I have to buy it from, you know, another person around.
Right.
And we change the sign out.
So, I mean, and when you come in here, if somebody will look for those, you can probably, if it's got a yellow tag and they find you, you could tell them a story about that produce. You could say, all right, it's this, and we planted it then.
I was joking with one of the kids. He said something about the corn. Here, I said, yeah, I know them all by name. And he handed one up real quick, and he said, well, what's this one name? I said, this Bill. I just.
He said, holy cow, he knows him.
Yeah.
Bill doesn't talk back. And right now, so Silver King and Silver Queen, right? Mm-hmm. People talk about that. Silver King is what we're getting right now.
Right. Silver Queen was one of the first generations of the white sweet corn, and it's a thing of the past. It doesn't have the shelf life. It doesn't yield near the potential, and it's a great corn at 9 o'clock this morning when it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it changes. It goes starchy or whatnot. It just doesn't have a long shelf life.
Where Silver King,
it holds better, much better. Holds better in a stock. It holds better once it gets here.
Yeah,
and that's what it's all about. I mean, I don't want somebody to come in and buy something and I picked it that morning and really it's not that great by that afternoon.
By the way, too, you and I were talking, so I'm looking at the text line back at our station. People can text 343-0106. And there are a bunch of texts in here, but this one from Ben says, go back here. I can paraphrase until I get to it. He asked, he said, what is y'all talking about? Let me get it right. Y'all talking about microwaving, y'all are talking about microwaving corn. What is your recipe for microwaving corn? So I'll let you start off here.
Well, basically, just me personally, I just shuck it, put no more than 2 ears on a plate and put a piece of saran wrap over it and put it in 2 minutes per ear. And believe me, when you bring it out 2 minutes, be careful how you unwrap it because the steam will burn your fingers. You know, people put it on the grill. People boil it. I actually spent about $14,000 on a big corn roaster.
Say what?
I spent $14,000 on a large commercial corn roaster.
How does this work? How much corn can you roast at one time?
Well, if I ever use it, I'll tell you. It's brand new, still in my barn 4 years ago. I keep threatening we're going to bring it here to the market, but we don't ever seem to have time to run it.
Right, because you're busy harvesting it.
Yes.
Yeah, versus roasting it.
I bought it just for big weekends and stuff.
Right.
It's brand new. It's totally set up for
a corn roaster.
Yes. It's got the little, we wash your hands, everything to go out into the public if you want to go away and use
right.
it.
Right.
And it's backed in my nice big barn, and we take it out and wash it once in a while, back it back in there.
Well, so that's something that we'll wait for you to get fired up for maybe 4th of July.
Need to start utilizing it. It was a friend of mine and I bought two.
Okay.
He uses his every day in his business,
and you don't,
and I don't.
Well, because you're busy getting the corn. Well, it's funny though saying that because I asked this again. I didn't think you and I just kind of had a disposable comment about microwaving corn.
Right.
I thought that was a. I didn't stop. People were on the text line asking about that. Yeah. I didn't stop because I thought we all
right.
kind of
did
that.
Right. But, no,
I mean, I take butter, you know, whatever it needs. If it's perfect, I don't put anything on it. But if it's not, I take a butter and a little bit of salt and that saran wrap around it and put it in the microwave and let it rip.
I always just do it first and then put the butter on after it comes out, melt it down. Yeah.
And it's so good.
In 2 minutes, you have near corn ready to eat.
It's so good.
And if that night, if you happen to be eating a BLT, which you got your tomatoes, your bacon, your lettuce here, then that corn goes along with it very well.
Well, that's what we were just talking about. When Billy and I were talking, and I said, Billy, is there a certain occurrence this time of year where when the tomatoes come in that your sales of bacon go through the roof? And he said, yeah. He said it's on a curve there. That, you know, when the tomatoes are in, the bacon sales go up. And I'm a BLT freak, so I got to say I'm on board with that. What about tomatoes? What do you have in right now for tomatoes?
Tomatoes, we're picking green tomatoes, and probably by, I would say, in 3 to 5 days, we'll start bringing in some vine ripes.
And you say vine ripes, you're doing those...
Vine ripes are red, they'll let them turn red on the vine.
Right, yeah. So you're doing those in greenhouse, or you're doing those
in
the field?
No, they're in the field.
When do you start those? When do you start your tomatoes?
Are you talking about planting or starting to pick?
When do you start planting those? How do you get... Because, you know, it's funny, we talk about this all the time. You look at national news sources, and they'll say, May, time to put your tomatoes in.
Right.
Here in the South, that's a little late.
Right. First of March, and you go real early the first few days of March, you stand that chance of losing.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to, by the 10th of March, we try to have them planted.
Now, okay, we're getting them now. We're getting green tomatoes now. We'll get the vine ripened soon. Let's talk about what's next on the list as we go through the summer. What's the next one to be on the lookout for?
Well, the butter beans started today. I mean, we all been kind of watching them, you know, the past few days when they get ready. We started picking pink eye peas about a week ago. But we're kind of, the next thing for us will be the watermelons. We're already picking cantaloupes. So, really, we're starting to pick everything that we grow.
This is fantastic. I mean, I'm looking at Suzanne from the text line says, what's happening at Allegory Markets is news to me. I had no idea someone here was providing local vegetables from local sources. So there you go. I mean, this is, and y'all said, this is, y'all been here since 03. Right?
We used to grow for a lot of other vendors, and we found that, you know, this is what was our niche. And I was told by an older farmer years ago, find you a niche and you'll make a living. Right. Don't find a niche, you'll work yourself to death.
Yes.
With no profit at the end of the week. And they were about right. I mean, you know, you got to get in here and you got to sell it direct to the public and offer them a good product at a good price and cut the middleman out.
And people were texting in who stopped by and picked up the makings of BLTs and others, and they said we couldn't stay long enough to say hello, but they came through. Thank you, Tony, for that text. All right, if people want to, I mean, the best way to do this is just come by and see what you got at any given time.
Sure.
But the corn, if I'm saying from now on through the summer, how long can I get Silver King?
As long as Mother Nature doesn't take it away from us.
Okay, how does she do that?
Bad storms.
You know, that H-word thing?
Yeah, that we don't mention that.
Yeah,
we don't mention that word. But, you know, we should have corn till the 25th of July.
Really? Okay.
Yes, we have corn right now that's not but 6 inches tall. That late plantings to hit that time slot. See, we plant every 4 days from the time we start until just recently.
So every 4 days you have the new...
Put a planting in.
But if y'all didn't hear in the first segment, talking to Vince about this, that when it's... You back this off and you're ready for big weekends like this Father's Day weekend coming up or for 4th of July, Independence Day weekend, you planted more rows than
normal. You'll plant more rows. You'll plant an extra planting to hit that slot. Instead of just having our regular, what we need for day in, day out. Okay, this
like
is
I said, you're in the logistics business. You're not afraid. You're a farmer and logistics.
Hitting that time slot, let's add a planting. So we have two coming at one time. Maybe three coming at one time on 4th of July weekend.
Wow.
We have extra corn coming this coming weekend for Father's Day. Father's Day is a big corn selling weekend.
Well, now, because we dads have good taste, or what is that?
No. We dads all want a home-cooked meal.
Yes.
And so that's generally a day you get it. So people come in and buy that corn to cook dad a dinner.
Okay, and it's going to, if I'm involved, it's going to involve some corn for sure.
Sure, okay.
Then some of the, we mentioned the Billy's bacon.
Right.
Okay, we got that making. So we got corn, we got bacon. We got some, what else would you put on the menu? What, if we're stopping by, they're listening out there, they're going to make
lettuce,
a great meal.
Lettuce and tomato. By then, we're picking our homegrown tomatoes. You're not going to beat them. Mm. And then we have the bacon, and we have the lettuce, and
What about onions?
Oh, onions, yes. We any kind of onions. Now, no onions that I have here are raised right here in Baldwin County.
Okay.
Yeah. We have the Vidalia onions out of Georgia, and we have the yellow and the white and the green.
Can you talk about that for a second? I love having you on here. So I've gotten this discussion with people before about sweet onions versus a Vidalia onion, and there's you can't call all sweet onions Vidalia.
Okay. Well, I had a friend here that grew the exact same onions of Vidalia right here in Baldwin County.
Right.
Made a tremendous crop. But could not market them because of the name, trade name, Vidalia.
It's got to come from
Vidalia. Yes, it's got to come there. He could not put Vidalia onion on that box.
So some people will say, well, I don't want that sweet onion there. I want a Vidalia onion. Mm-hmm. They need to check with somebody like you. It may be the exact same thing. It's just
pretty much not. The Vidalia onion, nobody tries to grow it because they can't trademark it, sell it like that.
Right.
I mean, and so there is a lot of sweet onions there, but the Vidalia
onion. But you can grow an onion
the same variety as a Vidalia right here.
Right.
But you can't legally trademark it that.
That's from
getting the name sells.
They could eat the same kind of onion.
They could.
It just wouldn't be called Vidalia.
That's correct.
So, sweet onions. You got a good selection of those?
Yes, we do.
And you said the bell peppers aren't getting to be orange or red because
we're picking them so fast. I mean, you're not letting them happen. They're large size, extra large, and you know what? People are standing here wanting to buy them two for a dollar, and I don't want to hold them up. I'll bring them on here and let them buy them.
All right. Remind folks, too, they're driving by. How do they find you? If they've not been here before, Vince, how do they find you?
We're at the intersection of 181 and 64. Big green buildings. There's Allegory Farm Market on out of it.
Hours today and on through the week?
Hours every day except Sunday are 8 to 6, and Sunday is 9 to 5.
And, y'all, he's also farming at the same time. My kind of man. Thanks for having us out here.
Thank y'all for being here. Thank you very much.
Coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, and live at Allegri Farm Markets in Daphne. What a great bunch of folks out here, and we've had a fantastic time. Thanks to everybody who stopped on by. We'll be here for a little bit longer with some FM Talk 106.5 goodies, and the folks from Monroe Sausage out front cooking sausage, dogs, and bacon. I just slid on out of my buddy Sid Sexton started rolling in here. He had some bacon. And then I saw the bacon, and I couldn't help myself, so I ran out during the news break and got some bacon as well. But, yeah, sausage dogs out there and bacon. FM Talk 106.5 goodies. And like we said in here, the speckled butter beans just came in. The white butter beans, they've got it just as I've been here, those have been delivered. Also, like a constant flow of Silver King corn coming in, fresh from the fields. And a big selection of squash. I'm looking at squash. I'm looking at bell peppers, cantaloupes, watermelons. I mean, they've got it laid out here. So you need to come on by and check it out today, tomorrow, or before this big Father's Day weekend. Because they have the, I mean, go ahead and stock up now. And the fact that you got tomatoes and you have bacon in the same place is not lost on me. I'm getting supplies for BLTs before I leave here because, well, because I can. And this time of year, I'm going to use them. Let's see here. Questions about... that's a good question. Green beans. I don't know. I'll have to ask here in a second. We should just do like a produce hotline here for Allegri Farmer. They are? Yes. So locally grown green beans, they can get them right now? Okay. Patty just gave me the heads up. So there you go. That's the that's an instant answer there for it. Let's see here. You know what? Probably I cannot read and do the show with all the produce questions. You'll need to come by and check it out in person. Somebody's asking about the Billy's Bacon. Yeah, they've got the Billy's Bacon. This texter said had Billy's Bacon from Allegri last night on hamburgers, and it's the best. Man, y'all are like... Thank goodness it'll be 2 o'clock here and be lunchtime for me in just a second. All right, and tomorrow, taking the show on the road as well, we're heading over to Cart Doctor in Theodore, so stop by and see us. Also, it is the second Tuesday of the month. That means Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran will join us, and he will be in the noon hour versus the 1 o'clock as usual. So we're flipping some things around, so he's going to join us in the noon hour tomorrow from Cart Doctor. I don't know, Dalton. I'm going to lay the story out. Maybe we can address this some. You know, I had the story last week and never did get it on the show. And we can address it a little bit tomorrow morning and maybe a lot more tomorrow afternoon. Story I put on Twitter last week. This is serious stuff, y'all. The headline, dodgeball isn't just problematic. It's an unethical tool of oppression, according to researchers. Yeah, story from the National Post here. So the Pride of Canada, Joseph Breen, wrote the story and said, thousands of academics are gathering in Vancouver for the annual Congress of the Humanities and Social Science. They will present papers on everything from child marriage in Canada to why dodgeball is problematic. Yeah, this is real, y'all. Said the says the games children play in schoolyards are famously horrible. If you stop and think about it, then this is what this guy writes. He said tag, for example, singles out one poor participant, often the slowest child, as a dehumanized id who runs vainly in pursuit of progressives, and they cut off that part of the story. Then he goes on to say progressives quite like dodgeball, a team sport in which players throw balls at each other trying to hit their competitors and banish them to the sidelines of shame. When the Canadian Society for the Study of Education meets in Vancouver at the Congress of the Humanities and Social Sciences, a trio of education theorists will argue that dodgeball, like battle ball, y'all, dodgeball, is not only problematic in the modern sense of displaying hierarchies of privilege based on athletic skill. This is a real story, y'all. This is not from The Onion. But it's outright miseducative. They put that in quotes. Says dodgeball is not just helpful to the development of kind and is not helpful to the development of kind and gentle children who will become decent citizens in a democracy. It's actively harmful in the process. They go on to say dodgeball is a tool of oppression. It is not saved because some kids like it, according to this presentation by Joy Butler, professor of curriculum and pedagogy at University of British Columbia. She goes on to say, as we consider the potential of physical education to empower students by engaging them in critical and democratic practices, we conclude that the hidden curriculum offered by Dodgeball is antithetical to this project, even when it reflects the choices of the strongest and most agile students. Okay, so they're presenting right now on this, and they're saying that dodgeball is not good. Not good for children to see this. They said it's it marginalizes students. It also goes on later in the story, and we'll talk about this tomorrow. It goes on to address capture the flag. It says capture the flag is a militaristic game. Of course it's a militaristic game. Like all games, you know, that you have to go capture flags. But yes, we'll get into this. So in Canada, they're debating right now as they're getting ready for the, you know, curriculum for next school year. No dodgeball, no capture the flag. What games will be left, we're not quite sure, but we'll address that tomorrow. All right, out of here for now. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Thank you to Vince, Patty, and everybody here at Allegri Farm Markets, and we'll do it again real soon.